Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, January 27th, 2008, and this is show number 132. Well, I know all of you must be very unsettled because you did not get a Honda Bob story last week. You must have felt awful. I can't apologize enough. The worst part is I had a great story to tell. I just forgot. Oh, I feel terrible about this. Well, anyway, let me tell the story. When I was at Macworld, a bunch of us podcasters went out to lunch. I'm not even sure how it came up, but suddenly Don McAllister of Screencasts Online, who is from England, says with a wistful sigh, "I sure wish I had a Honda Bob. I love your stories about him." I just cracked up. Then Katie of the MacCore podcast said, "Oh man, me too. Nobody like that in Florida where I live." Anyway, I just loved it. I actually feel sorry for people who don't live near Honda Bob. Must be horrible to have to drive to a dealer, wait in a long line to drop off your car, even though you got there at 7 a.m. to beat the crowd. Then they have to, these people have to leave their cars there, and if they're lucky, they have to get a ride in some creepy vehicle back to their house. And of course, they're late for work by now, too. Then they have to leave work early, begging a friend or a relative to drive them back to the dealer by some ridiculous hour like 4 p.m. Well, if they lived near Honda Bob, they could have him drive to their house while they relaxed inside, maybe even being productive. And Bob would work on their cars and do all of the driving. That's the life I live. If you're lucky enough to live in the L.A. or Orange County areas, go out and buy a Honda or an Acura, and then you too can enjoy the peace and tranquility that is Care by Honda Bob. Give him a call at 562-531-2321 or shoot him an email at hdabob@aol.com. If you live too far away, go ahead and enjoy his website at least at hdabob.com. Honda Bob is not affiliated with Honda or Honda Motors worldwide. Well, you guys had your very first homework assignment, I believe, was when I started asking people to put comments on iTunes. Well, the reason I wanted you to do that was because it turns out that's how your podcast actually gets onto the featured pages. Well, I have news for you. It worked. All your dedication writing reviews on iTunes has moved the No Silicast up to the first page of Software How To in the technology section. Okay, so it's the last one on that page, but we made the first page. I really want to thank all of you who wrote reviews. We did it. And if you've been meaning to write a review and haven't just quite gotten around to it yet, head on over to your country store and tell them what you think. Heck, I'm not even asking for a nice review. Read what listener James wrote and you'll know I'm telling the truth. You know that one of my pet peeves is inaccessible websites, right? You know, the places you go to that have those really annoying CAPTCHAs, you know, the squiggly text that you have to decipher in order to join in the fun, which are basically a locked door at the entrance for the visually impaired. Well, something wonderful happened this week over at OpenDNS. They're the folks that provide free access to domain name services, like if your ISP is acting up and you can't get through their domain name servers, or you want to do some track hiding, that sort of thing. These guys have posted on their blog at blog.opendns.com a wonderful message. Turns out they figured out how to do an audio CAPTCHA so everybody can play. Now that in and of itself is not revolutionary. What's great is they're a very well-known site, so this will help raise awareness. But also in that blog post, they say that it wasn't hard to do, and that if anyone needs help, they'll be glad to share what they learned doing it. Isn't that awesome? I think it's great. Almost makes me want to put a CAPTCHA on my own site so I can turn around and make it audible. All right, not really. I'm just kidding. Well, Margaret has been a listener about as long as anybody, and this week she showed me a really cool tool. All right, got to back up, got to start with a problem statement, right? Well, back in 1986, she recorded some music off of a Holland radio station. She pulled it from the tapes that she had into her iPod quite a while ago. But then recently, she actually got to know the DJ who was on the air back in 1986, who was actually the guy she'd recorded. He's still in Holland and he's still on the air. So she thought it would be really fun to send him the audio files. So I said I would put them up on my server so he'd be able to pull them back down. The problem was that I had to get them back off of her iPod and onto my disk. Well, everyone knows you can't do that, right? Well, unless you have some special tools to do it. I've never downloaded any of those kinds of tools, so Margaret got to teach me. She hooked me up with a cool tool called iPod Disk, which is actually from Google Code. It's released under the GPL, the GNU Public License, as in open source, as in free, and you can pick it up at code.google.com/p/iPod Disk. And as always, the link's in the show notes. Well, I love the download site. On the right is the disk image for the Mac. Sorry, no Windows installer. And a couple of other links, like to the wiki. But on the left, it simply says, if that's not enough, read this and this. If these still aren't enough, watch this. Of course, other thises are links. I don't know why it tickled me, but it just kind of made me laugh. I like the way they did it. Anyway, so you download the software, drag it to your applications disk, and then plug in the iPod you want to snake stuff off of. If you make sure the iPod is set up for disk mode, then you can launch iPod Disk and you'll suddenly be able to see all of the audio and video content on your iPod. How cool is that? Well, it was cool for a minute, just long enough for me to see the files I wanted. It even let me play them, and then it crashed. Oh well, I messed around with deleting the application, reinstalling, deleting plist and all that, but nothing would make it go again. Finally, I rebooted, reinstalled, and then it worked like a champ. Every time I went back to it, I didn't have any trouble at all. So I don't know if that was just a fluke because I do such weird things with my system, or it might be a little unstable. I sure don't want to slam the software developers because it really did work great in the end, but I wanted to warn you that it could act hinky from time to time. I checked the wiki how-to notes, and it did say it hadn't been tested on the Intel Macs yet. So maybe that was the problem. Oh, it also said I was supposed to install something called Mac Fuse, but, you know, like, there was reading involved, and I already got what I wanted, so I didn't. So in any case, if you're on a Mac and you need to get some files off of your iPod, give iPod Disk a try. Well, last week I got back from Macworld Expo, and I told you that I did two interviews during the show. The first is with Gene McDonald of Smile on Your Mac, talking about their product, Disk Label. I'm going to play the second interview back-to-back, and it's with Cynthia Taylor from MacSpeech talking about their software, Dictate. Hi, I'm here at Macworld Expo with Gene from Smile on My Mac, and we're looking at Disk Label. How are you doing, Gene?
I'm great, Allison. Thanks for coming by.
All right, so why do I need Disk Label? I'm going to go ahead and review it later after I get a chance to play with it, but I want to hear what you think is cool about this product.
Well, Disk Label lets you create designs for your CDs and DVDs. The labels, also the packaging, that you can totally customize yourself or you can use our templates, but it makes it really easy to do a really nice design and then print it because it's set up for printing on any kind of label or also onto the printers that do direct-to-CD printing like Epson and Canon, and also LightScribe. It supports LightScribe design, so if you want to burn laser designs into your discs. So.
Now, I always have trouble lining up my printouts onto those labels. How did you solve that problem?
Well, with the way we have it set up is that you can you have a whole choice here of pretty much any label ever invented. It's not generic at all. You pick the manufacturer that you have if you're doing labels.
So you can go into Avery, for example.
Right, Avery, right here. And that'll set up exactly the thing. Then you get your designs over here, and it drops them right in. And you can, and that. Will,
oh, so you can make more than one.
So you could do different ones on the same sheet, which, you know,
But it really lines up?
It really lines up. We actually have a calibration thing here, which.
So you can adjust it?
You could adjust it, like here down in the bottom left-hand corner, by millimeters. You know, you print basically. You print out an outline, you print out a page, and it puts like a little registration mark. You measure where the registration mark is, and then you enter those measurements in here for calibrate. But I have never had to calibrate.
Oh wow! Now I think what the other women here said that she did have to calibrate, but it was like by 1 millimeter or something like that. Once she did it, now that does that stick?
That sticks.
Okay.
Yeah. So
okay,
it's pretty fascinating because I know what you're talking about. I had the same problem. I mean, how many sheets of label paper I screwed up because
hundreds
like, oh.
And hundreds. Well, even when I get it all, I swear it's set right. I can print again tomorrow and it'll be wrong. So I don't understand what's going on.
So
this looks a lot easier doing it in Photoshop the way I've been doing it.
It totally is. And even if you have a design in Photoshop, the thing about Disc Label is you can drag any image into the design.
That's what I need, yeah.
But it's also set up so you can use your iPhoto and iPhoto library or your iTunes album art.
You can see kind of a media browser, like, oh, nice,
so
very nice.
So here's, like, pictures from the iPhoto library, and you can pick, you know, what text layout you want. And all of this is totally editable when you go to the edit menu. Some people just do a picture, text, pick out your iTunes playlist if you were doing
music.
It drops in the info automatically, and they'll go to print. They'll say, I'm done. You know,
wow, no editing.
Most people, you know, want to do
I want to futz with it.
So
you can you mess with the fonts and all that?
Totally mess with the fonts. You just select them. I'm going to take this picture that I put in isn't really the best for having a font behind it, but actually what I would do is I'd use one of our tools for creating a box.
Oh, that's what I need.
Yeah.
Can you do a color picker on that to pick, say, a color off of the background?
Absolutely.
So what she's just shown is she's got half of the screen is kind of this salmon color, and the other half is the picture.
So I can open up, it's the
standard color picker. Okay.
Grab the little sampler magnifying glass and say I want this like brown, and that will pick up whatever I'm.
That's exactly
that.
What I need.
Yeah.
I can't wait to play with this myself, Jean. This looks really great.
So that's really fast, like a really pretty decent looking label.
Oh, yeah.
People out there in Radio Land can't actually see it, but it's gorgeous.
But I'll do screenshots when I do the review. Thanks for your time, Jean.
Anyway, thanks for coming.
So I'm standing with Cindy Taylor of Max Speech, and she's going to talk to me a little bit about Dictate, which is a new program that's a follow-on to iListen, but a totally new product. Is that right?
That's correct. It's based on the Dragon speech engine. Our previous product was based on the Philips speech engine.
So Dragon, the Dragon Naturally Speaking folks?
That's correct.
Are you the same company? Or?
We're not the same company. We've come to a business agreement, and they've licensed their speech engine to us, and we've been able to port it over to use on the Mac.
Oh, that's fantastic. I've got a listener who's a switcher, and it's driving him crazy not having Dragon Naturally Speaking, and he's tried iListen, but he said some bad words about it that I won't repeat right now. So,
well, iListen's been what got us to this point. We've been able to help a lot of people with iListen, and there's been some very dedicated users, and there have been people that have been frustrated. It wasn't the best product, but we've been trying.
A first step, though, right?
Correct, correct. You have to take baby steps sometimes.
So what does Max Speech do for us that we couldn't do before?
The accuracy and the speed is multifold increased, and it's just a giant improvement.
Those are the top two things, right?
Right. And because of that, the voice training itself is a lot shorter. It's about a 5-minute training now, and you get a tremendous amount of accuracy. We've been having a lot of success with handing the microphone off to other people who are the same gender, and they are getting quite a bit of accuracy right off the bat using somebody else's profile.
Oh, really? Oh, so you're saying, so female to female, it tends to... Oh, interesting.
Female to female, it works.
Oh, interesting. I bet it wouldn't work with me because my voice is too low. It'd have to go male to female for me. That'd be fun.
But my husband, who's the president of the company, handed his microphone to David Pogue at a Macworld Live conference today in front of 2,000 people, and every word came out right.
Oh, that's fantastic. You guys must have been holding your breath during that.
Extremely nervous, but very excited when it was done.
That reminds me of when Bill Gates did the speech recognition thing and nothing worked at all.
That's what David Pogue said when Andy handed him the microphone. He said, obviously he hasn't seen the horror that happened for Microsoft.
Oh, yeah, that must be great. So what's the interface like here?
You can use any application. You install the Dictate product, and it can go on to your dock just like any of the other applications. You need a headset microphone. One of the big differences for people who may already own iListen is the requirement that we need an Intel-based processor now.
Okay, that makes sense.
For Dictate. You just need all the processing.
It has been 2 years since Intel's came out, so I guess that makes sense.
Right. Well, some people come, think they're going to get it, and then they realize they have to buy a new computer first. So
better to know up front, right?
Right, exactly. It's a little disappointing for me.
So she's putting on a headset microphone right now.
And I'm going to just turn the microphone on.
It has a nice big red, your microphone's not on indicator, which is good.
Correct.
I wish all my applications had that.
Correct.
so now I can see her voice.
In Microsoft Word.
And Word just popped up.
And because I'm showing you what we're showing today at the show is a beta version, there's a lot of command and control features that aren't enabled yet. So where I'm going to have to touch the mouse right now to get the file open, you would normally be able to say file new or new document.
Okay.
But part of the reason we're not selling the product today is the engineering for those features isn't complete.
Not quite done.
Right.
Okay.
Right. They're coming. They're definitely, that's why we're not selling. So you'll see me touch the mouse pad a few times.
Okay. So she's just going to go open a new file here. A new blank document.
And that shows you the new document. And as I speak, the words are coming up on the screen. Period, new paragraph. And I will have to include the punctuation because part of the recognition process for the software is having the context of punctuation, the endings of sentences, full sentences, the beginnings of paragraphs.
Let me tell them a little bit. What I'm seeing on screen is in the upper right, there's a green microphone thing and an indicator of the sound level. And in little tiny text under it, it was showing what she was typing. But then when it came back on screen, it took a while before it came on screen. But it says, and I will have to include punctuation because part of the recognition process for the software is having the context of punctuation, the ending of sentences. This is the beginning of the paragraph. Okay, that's fantastic.
New paragraph.
I want to see the one thing that never worked very well for me with what was the product I just told you? No, before that, I used Via Voice, was it did pretty well if I did a long text string. It would keep up pretty well. But doing something like Instant Messenger, it was horrible. I want you to do just a couple of words and then a new paragraph. A couple of words, a new paragraph.
Today is June 5th, period. New paragraph. I don't believe it really is June 5th. Period.
Say something really short, like, hi.
Hi. Scratch that. Hi. I'm having trouble with the sound here. Everybody does really need to realize that this is a very noisy environment.
Sure,
so
yeah, yeah. You can hear on the recording, I'm sure, that it is noisy here.
Yep. Yep. No, it's getting young.
Yeah. I wonder, this is a beta product, like you said, but I'd be curious if we could talk later, after you guys have the product out, to test the little short snippets, because that is an interesting, if you could use it in IM, that would be nice.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody could help you with that. That's not a problem.
Great. Well, this looks really amazing. I like the interface a lot. I like the information it's giving you, the visuals on screen, and certainly the accuracy was pretty amazing here. There, got one word. They calmed down and quiet a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for your time,
You're
Cindy.
Welcome.
This looks very interesting. I'll be curious when it comes out. Now, I kind of put Cynthia on the spot there, springing that idea of doing a short snippet of conversation. And, you know, to be fair, it definitely was in a noisy environment there. But I will be real curious to see how that works out when they come up with the finished product, because I think maybe it would have a little bit of trouble with those short snippets. I still think it's a really impressive product, and it was fun to try to find something it couldn't do. Hopefully I'm wrong in the finished product, like I said. One other thing, I was confused because I heard some people calling it iDictate, but Cynthia and the Mac Speech website both said it was called Dictate. Well, I noticed over on the Mac Observer website that they were also calling it iDictate, so I asked them about it. Dave Hamilton and Jeff Gamet checked into this, and here's what Jeff wrote back. He said, Dave asked me to do some follow-up on the iDictate versus Dictate things, and here's what I found out. Mac Speech did have a product called iDictate, a stripped-down version of iListen. That was supposed to launch back in early 2002. Turns out that it never shipped, even though it was demoed at Macworld Expo that year. Now we have Dictate coming out as the successor to iListen. What a difference only one little letter can make in a name. Well, I appreciate them doing the research for me, and no wonder I was confused. All right, it's called Dictate, and I want to hear any of you guys messing it up and calling it iDictate. Okay, I've probably said it enough times that you're going to get really confused. Well, I've got Victor Cahiao of the Typical Mac User podcast on the phone here today because I wanted to do a rant.
Ooh, go for it.
So I was listening to Leo's radio show, Leo Laporte's radio show, and I'm addicted to Leo. I listen to everything he does that I am interested in. And so he's on the radio, right? And he's doing his call-in show. And this guy calls in and he says, this is back right around Christmas time that he did this. Mm-hmm. But this guy calls in and says, hey, me and my buddies really want to get leopard. There's five of us and we want to split the cost of the family pack five ways. But what I want to know is we don't live in the same house. Is that going to invalidate the license agreement? So what do you think Leo said?
I hope he said, yes, you'll be violating the license agreement.
No, he said, ah, go for it. And then he says, probably invalidates the license agreement, but why not? And I was just horrified. I was thinking, no. So he looks up the license agreement because he says, I'm not really sure, but let me look it up. So he looks it up and it says specifically that you have to live in the same household. He even gives a definition of a household. It said you live in a house, you live in an apartment, you live in a condo, you live in a trailer. I mean, it gives every possible option. I just can't believe he would say that.
Yeah, I got to be with you on this one. Wouldn't it be nice? I mean, we see what's happened, I think, with Apple is that they have been so good about doing this. As a matter of fact, you know, when you buy a copy of Leopard, a single copy, there's absolutely nothing except your ethics stopping you from loading that into every computer in your house.
Which is exactly why we should be ethical, right?
Exactly,
they're trusting
right.
us, so be trustworthy.
Right, because otherwise, do you want them to play the game that our friends over at Microsoft play, which is call home all the time? You know, how many licenses do you have? I've installed Windows no less than four times on Parallels because every once in a while when something goes honky or wacky on my system, I log into Parallels and it says, well, you don't have a license for Windows. Put in this 32-digit number, and then I have to call a telephone call center in India, and I have to give them this big number, and then they say, are you only using it on one machine? And I say yes, and all is good in the world. Is that what we want? Well, that's what we'll get if we start playing these kinds of games with Apple. So I guess I'm with you on this rant.
Well, that's what drove me crazy is he above everybody rants about DRM, right? So in the middle of this, he starts talking about, he goes, well, I sure hope that Apple isn't ever going to be like Microsoft, you know, and do this draconian DRM to us and da-da-da-da. And I'm thinking, look, these guys make it where if you have a laptop and a desktop and you're only going to use it one at a time, you know, hey, that's probably fine. They make it where you can do that. And yet here he is just purposely abusing what I think is an extremely generous plan. It's only, what is it, $199 versus $129? $199 gives it to you for five computers in your house. We ought to encourage them to do that by being honest, right?
Look, we don't even own the software. We own the media, the license to use it. It's not our software. The license says that clearly. We own the media, you know, and so we're licensed to use it in the way that they prescribed, but only the physical media is what we're really paying for.
Right. So he got off on this big thing saying, well, they made their money off of us on the hardware, you know, it doesn't matter about the software. They're a hardware company. Well, that's just so wrong. You ought to encourage the people who make it easy for you, right? That let you do what you need to do and be ethical.
That's right. And I'm reading the license right now, and, you know, absolutely, it's very, very clear what they mean by that. You may make one copy of the Apple software, excluding boot ROM, in, you know, to have to use in one machine and to have a backup copy of that. And that's it. I mean, they're even letting you do that. I mean,
yeah.
Try that with a Windows disk.
Exactly. You know, I was really careful when the last operating system, when Tiger came out, my daughter was away at college. So what I did was I waited until she moved home from the summer so she only lived here. And then I let her have the operating system. Well, when Leopard came around, I looked at it and I said, you know, she really doesn't live here anymore. She has an apartment that she'll have year round. So I bought her a separate copy of Leopard. Well, what was funny in Leo's when he was saying all this was he said he was reading it out loud and it says if you have a kid away at college living in a dorm or something, it's okay to give it to them too. So
it
I
is.
Think I actually went overboard in my ethics on Leopard. I may sell off a copy. We'll see.
No, you can do that. I'm reading that right now that for a child who normally resides in your household but is now residing in a separate on-campus location, you can extend the license to them.
Yeah, you know what? She's not on campus anymore. She's away in an apartment. So I think I'm going to stick with a separate license for her. But I mean, I'm motivated to do that because they treated me so well, because they treated me with respect that I would be honest. I'm going to be honest. It's the people that make it ridiculously hard that I want to abuse, you know?
Well, I mean, you're getting five licenses for $70 more.
Yeah, what's that cost through Microsoft? You know, what do you do with Microsoft? I believe you have to buy it again and again and again and again, right?
Again and again and again and again.
There is no family pack.
Everybody now, there is no family pack. Yeah, and extend it to everybody. It's not just Apple. The little guy out there, you guys, come on.
Oh, yeah.
Let's be fair with everyone who's making software that we love. Pet peeve of mine, so thank you for including me.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. The pay your shareware fees. You know, if you're using the software, pay them. You got to encourage that because that's what's really kept the Mac community as exciting as it is, I think.
It'll go away if we don't. It'll just become, you know, a wasteland of nothingness, because why would anyone want to spend their talents and time building software just to have it ripped off?
Right. All right, Victor. Well, thanks for joining me in this little rant.
Sure. Thank you for including me. I like ranting.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond, and we're going to take it up a notch. Today, I've got Bart Bouchatz from bartbouchatz.ie, and we also have Ben McRedman, project leader of Hipster, a revolutionary up-and-coming social networking site. How you doing, Ben?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Bart, you on the line here?
Yeah, I'm here loud and clear. Everything good.
So Bart and I decided to get Ben on the line because we met him through Leo, I think it was, and I've gotten to know a little bit about this project he's working on, and it sounds pretty interesting. So let's dig in. In short, what is Hipster exactly, Ben?
So Hipster simply is a social network, but it does a lot more than that. So it's an aggregator of social networks, and in our opinion, there's two types of social networks. There's the first type, which is like Bebo, MySpace, and Facebook. And these sites, they do lots of things. They do photos, videos, comments, blogs, status. They do like everything. They're general social networks, but they don't focus on one thing and do it very well. And then we have the second type, which is the types like Flickr, Pounce, Twitter, Jaiku, etc., which do just one thing. They do it very well. So what we do is we aggregate together. We bring together all the second type into our social network, create a social network which does lots of things but does it very well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I see what you're saying. So this would not do any aggregation of things like Facebook, Mebo, and MySpace, but just the second category.
Not yet, but in the future we'll probably bring in, because our main goal in the end is to bring together these hundreds of social networks which are all floating about there, and you have to go to 20 different websites to see what your friends have been doing. And our main goal in the end is to bring those all together. So hopefully in the end we'd be able to integrate Facebook and Bebo and MySpace, but they don't offer us the right APIs for us to do that at the moment.
Okay, but the other services do?
Yeah, because, for example, Facebook has an API which allows you to get into Facebook but not get stuff out of Facebook. But Flickr has an API which lets you get stuff out of Flickr but not into Flickr.
So, okay, so you have this cool aggregator doohickey thingy. So, obviously, it sucks in stuff from outside, but if you don't have outside accounts, is there still something you can actually do with Hipster?
Oh, yeah. So, we'll have, if you don't have Flickr and you don't have YouTube, essentially, from what I've told you so far, Hipster is useless to you. But that's, we thought of that. So, we're going to have Hipster videos and Hipster photos and Hipster status and Hipster blogs. But these would be as comparable to the services offered by Bebo or MySpace or Facebook. They won't be that great, but they'll suffice for the general user.
Well, that sounds kind of interesting. So it looks like you could have more than one of the same kind of thing. Like you could have Flickr and maybe a Smug Mug. So if you had some in both, or you had one or the other?
Yeah. So at the moment, what we allow you to do is we will allow you to do is replace every individual element on the page with a third-party service. So you can say, don't use Hipster photos, use Flickr. Don't use Hipster status, use Twitter. But in the end run, we want to be able to say, don't use hipster photos, use Flickr and Zoomer. Use both of those. And that's what we can do in the end. But at the moment, we're just starting off with just small.
That sounds pretty interesting. So is this going to be free like the other services?
Yeah, it'll be 100% free and advertising supported.
Okay, and when you go live, can anybody join right away, or how are you going to do that?
So at the moment, you can sign up for an invite at hips.com for when we launch. And when we launch, it'll be a limited beta. And if you sign up for an invite at hips.com, eventually you'll get an invite. And every person who gets an invite will be given 30 invites to invite all their friends.
Okay. Oh, since you're giving out the URL there, we ought to spell hipster as HIPPSTR. Because there's a ban against the letter E in beta in websites, right?
Actually, no. We couldn't afford the E. We wanted it with the E, but someone already had it.
Well, that's good.
I'm surprised the Web 2.0 like one wasn't more expensive.
No, strangely. Web 2.0 is cheap, if you haven't noticed.
You just have to be more imaginative than the domain squatters.
Mm-hmm. Which is just finding something which already exists.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned it's going to be supported by advertising. What if, you'd say, you have a little bit of money in your pocket and you don't want to see the ads? Will you be, at any stage in the future, maybe offering it without the ads? If you pay?
Yeah, probably. We'll probably, in the future, offer a higher-up account, like a special account, which probably won't do anything more. It might offer you more storage, and it'll probably take away the ads. But we'll be all advertised about it. Yeah.
Cool.
But we're also a bit concerned about advertising, because advertisers are going to love this platform. We have all your data coming in from every different site on the internet into one place. So we have to be careful about who we choose for advertising.
Well, or just how much information you give them. I presume you've thought of the whole privacy thing quite carefully.
Yeah, we have. Because that's a huge issue. If we've got all this data coming to one place, how do we keep it securely?
So there's not going to be a hipster beacon, no?
No.
Cheap shot.
Cheap shot, I know. I suppose being the nerdy person I am, I should probably ask some of the more nerdy questions as well. So are you going to be opening your APIs up for third-party people, since you're relying so heavily on APIs from other people?
Yeah. So we'll probably offer two APIs. We'll have the first, which lets you get into Hipster, and the second, which lets you get stuff out from Hipster. So the first, which allows you to develop on the Hipster platform, add a widget to a profile, develop a widget for profile, will be supported by Google's Open Social platform. And the advantage of this is Open Social is essentially a cross-social network API. So MySpace is going to adopt Open Social, and this means that the thousands of people who are going to be developing for MySpace are also going to be developing for Hipster, and vice versa. So
that's pretty sweet.
That helps a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good to cash in on that, actually. That gives you a big developer base for yourself. Yeah. While we're being all nerdy, I may as well ask the ultimate nerdy question. So what software language did you use for writing all this stuff?
So there's two parts to Hipster. There's the front end and the back end. So I'll start with what the back end's built off. So it's written in PHP, and we're using the CodeIgniter framework, which is quite a small community base at the moment, but it's very well documented. And this is running on Apache, which is running mod.php on a CentOS server. And we're using a MySQL database for the database.
Cool.
And
as a MySQL user, do you know or care that Sun Microsystems are buying MySQL out?
I saw that.
Not really. I just hope, because they seem to be pretty good with open source project, because they do OpenOffice, I believe.
Yeah, so compared to somebody else buying them, it's a pretty good company if they end up being bought.
You were saying the back end is all that stuff, and then you were going to say what the front end was?
So the front end is built using XHTML, CSS, and JavaScript using the jQuery framework, jQuery framework. If I said that right.
Well, this is getting nerdy.
Yeah.
And I presume it's all W3C compliant?
Of course. Well, most of it. Nah.
How about accessibility?
We hope to be pretty accessible. We've taken the basic stuff, like putting all tags for the images and so on.
How about captchas?
We're not finished yet, so we haven't written the registration bit yet. So, but we'll make sure they're accessible, because I hate it even when I can see perfectly, can't read a captcha. And then if you think about a visually impaired person trying to read that, it's just ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you saw, but OpenDNS just posted a big thing about the fact that they're using audio captchas now and how they looked at it and they thought it would be really hard, and then they got in there and it wasn't hard. And they said if anybody's having trouble with it, they'll help them do it.
That sounds pretty cool. I have no idea how I'd go about that, but I can't imagine it'd be that difficult.
Well, now you know who to ask, too. Well, I lost you guys back when you said PHP and MySQL. Right after that, I had no idea what you were talking about. So let me ask some a little lighter questions. So this sounds pretty cool, but when are you going to launch?
We hope we'll launch in about a month or two. We hope. But I have a lot of school at the moment, and a lot of exams coming up. But we hope to launch in a few months, and Nasilicast will be getting 20 invites.
Woot.
To give away.
So right at the very beginning, before everybody else gets invited?
Of course.
I sure like to hear that. Well, now, this whole thing about the three of us knowing each other is kind of funny. Like I mentioned, Leo is a friend of the show, and he introduced me to Ben, and we'd done some chatting and that. And then one day I was chatting with Ben on Skype, or I was chatting with Bart on Skype, I forget which, and then I decided to add the other one in. And as they're talking, you guys were talking, you recognized each other's accents and realized you're how many miles apart? 10, 15 miles apart? Or kilometers?
Something like that, something like that.
But now you guys had an opportunity to actually meet in real life. Ben, tell us about what was the event that you guys were at?
So we're at the BT Young Scientist event, which is an event held all over Ireland from north and south of Ireland each year for different, where in your school you organize a group of up to three people together to submit a project, and you compete amongst another 500 projects for BT Young Scientist of the Year, which goes to the European Young Scientist.
Wow, and who won that contest, Ben?
Well, this year, it was won overall by someone called Ema, who had a very cool project.
Uh-huh.
And we won our category, which was Intermediate Technology.
Congratulations, that's fantastic. Now, Bart, how did you end up there?
Well, there was my old school where I went to school years ago had invited me down to give a talk about encouraging people to do science a couple of months ago. And for the first time ever, they'd entered a few teams this year to the Young Scientist Awards. So I decided to take a day off work and head down to see how they all got on. And while I was at it, I figured I'd take some time to meet up with Ben.
That's pretty cool. I like it. I need to put a picture in the show notes here. Ben and Bart took a picture together with the Nosilicast logo.
Yeah, it wasn't our idea, in fair. I think you sort of insisted on it and threatened all sorts of things if I didn't.
Okay. I know I'm a narcissist. Well, is there anything else you want to tell us about Hipster, Ben?
It's really cool. No, it actually, like, I was playing with it the other day, just what we've done so far, and it's what I've been, like, I've built it and I know how it should work, so of course I need to get some people to test it and see if it's actually as easy to use as it should be. But it's what's, in my opinion, what's been missing from all these social networks for the several years they've been out. And I think that's our main goal, is to create a new type of social network which doesn't suck as much.
I think when we...
Well, I have to say, I got to see it at the Young Scientist Award, and I have to say I really liked what I saw. So I think it has great potential, and I hope it goes really well.
And Bart's a tough judge, too.
Yeah, I tend to get grumpy when stuff isn't nice and easy to use, but it looked good, and I was impressed with it.
And one of the things I liked, I haven't actually gotten to see it yet, but early on I was part of a program that you guys put together to ask people, what do you hate about social networks and what do you wish you had in social networks? And I really liked the idea that you got a lot of user input before you got started very far.
Yeah. Well, we ran a survey of about, we got about 150 replies, and yeah, we got a lot of good input, and we got basically what we thought was wrong with them anyway back from the users, which just encouraged us to go on with it.
Well, that's good. If the only question I think you didn't ask was how old are you? So, you know, you got an almost 50-year-old's opinion thrown into the mix. I'm not sure how that's going to help you or not.
We did actually ask the age, by the way.
Oh, you did?
But,
okay.
We had a lot of young people, but it's best to get, because if you're using social networks as well, it's not just for the young people who are using these, but so everyone's opinion helps. And I think that survey is still open if you go to hippstr.com/survey and fill it out.
Oh, cool. And you're still taking input?
I think so, yes. Let me check.
That's great.
I should probably know, shouldn't I?
Just often check. The question is, if someone puts something in, will it get to you? But all right. Well, I think we've probably, as Bart says, prattled on long enough. I really appreciate you working your schedule around for us, Ben and Bart, so that we could get this thing done. This is a lot of fun, and I wish you every bit of luck, and I can't wait to see it myself.
Thank you very much. I hope to get it launched soon.
Okay, see you, folks. And as ever, happy computing.
Well, to those people who used to tell me that I did too much scripting in my show, they certainly can't complain this week. Man, I'm telling you, a whole lot of that stuff was just on the fly. Hope you enjoyed all the variety that we had going on in the show, but I guess it's time to wrap things up. I want to thank all of you who keep writing to me. I just love it. And I really want to encourage more of you to join in the fun by emailing me at allison@podfeet.com. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.